The views expressed in our episode are ours alone and do not represent any other organizations. Our episodes discuss internet crimes against children and cases that involve the exploitation of children and may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Yeah, we don't want to do anything to scare your children. That's the last thing we want to do. We don't want to scare anybody.
Welcome to Catfish Cops. My name is Tony Godwin.
My name is Brandon Poor.
Why do you laugh?
It was the way you said, hello, everybody.
Hello, everybody.
It kind of sounded like you were, what's that guy's, Wilford Brimley, and you were about to talk about diabetes.
Yeah.
Hello, everybody.
My name is Wilford Brimley.
Or you were about to do like a jam commercial, like for like grape Smucker's jelly or something.
Oh, I love grape jam.
We're not playing royalties and we're not saying Smucker's.
If you want to sponsor us, we're happy to eat your grape jelly.
I don't know that Smucker's is listening to us right now.
You have no idea. You never know.
Man.
I'm a fan.
I love Smucker's.
Yeah. I love grape jelly.
Jelly in general. But hello, everybody. Welcome to Catfish Cops.
Yeah. Well, we're back for the final recap of last week's most vile offender, the Rimmer, the bunghole poker.
The Rimmer. He is an absolute
paranoid
end-to-end sicko, for sure.
End-to-end sicko. That is an appropriate name for last week's episode, and this will be a great continuation because, God, I know, we left everybody on the edge of the seat. I'm like, really? You had to do this? Cut it off right there?
Well, you probably needed a moment to cleanse your head. Just the thought of him video peeing and just to get it cluttered
up again this week. But
so let me just say this again. Of course, we're not trying to be graphic for graphic's sake. We're trying to educate you about what these guys really say. But to me, in my mind, I can think of a handful of cases that to me seemed like one of the most serious and most heinous of offenders. And this was very, very well up there as far as one of the most dangerous. To me at the time, particularly because of how cautious, how egregious the chats were, but also in addition to that, how cautious he was, how trying to be so hidden and deceptive and deleting. I mean, if he were talking to a real kid instead of me, I'm honestly afraid he would have not been caught. You'll hear more about that later but I'm afraid that with someone who's so cautious and covering up things as they go with a real kid, especially a real kid who might be younger, who feels manipulated into doing the thing. Like, you think about if I were a 12 or 13-year-old who's being manipulated by this predator, and he's saying, not only don't tell anyone, but delete it, start over, delete the app so we can get rid of the app altogether, go to this password-protected website URL that we got through a call, I'm just afraid the chances of catching this guy would have been very slim.
Yeah, and we didn't mention, I think, last week, but you had mentioned here in your notes that he was teaching you how to clear your browser cache and your browser history and all other things. Like, the level of
sophistication
that this guy has to ensure that, hey, I need to know that I'm not going to get caught. And he mentions a few times to you that, hey, the police can find these things. The whole paranoia of, like, calling on the phone to give you the URL and the password so that, you know, police couldn't eventually find it. Like, this is not the first time for this guy to be in the rodeo. Like, he's clearly had some history with this or some experience with this. And so he's a violent person that needs to be captured.
Yeah. And so another twist, there are a lot of little twists in here that were firsts and probably not ever seen again in my cases. One of the twists he had done, he had me go to a web-based chat platform. And what I learned with this web-based chat platform was it was designed to delete after a certain set amount of time.
Oh.
And there was nothing I could do to change that other than I had to enact our best protocols to make sure that I didn't lose that information.
Yeah.
And so it was another example.
And that's not even something you probably could have tested ahead of time, right?
I couldn't. I couldn't test it.
Well, you couldn't taste it.
One of the things, you know, in that case, I can't, you know, he's sort of sprung this out of the blue on me and he's like, go here. And so there's no time to check, like, what is this? Is this going to be something that's helpful or hurtful? I just have to sort of rely on my training, I guess, and how we've done things and, you know, sort of play it by ear at that point in how we're going to proceed. But again, like Tony said, he was very sophisticated in talking about, and that's why the clearing of the cache and the browser history and things like that was so important to him, because we're at this point moved from an application, we've moved to phone calls, we've moved to a password-protected video and photo place that he can share things with me, and then now we're on a web-based browser.
Which self-deletes.
It self-deletes, and he wants me to delete the traces of it that could be left behind.
The other note that you have here that is very off-putting, and I guess I'm asking for clarification, because you said and mentioned in this that he was very clear with you that when he had this sexual encounter with you that he was not going to use a condom.
Yes.
And then he made some reference, I guess, to being on some kind of a medication that would ensure that he would not give you HIV. So am I to allude that he has HIV and was planning to have some unprotected sex act with a child?
I believe so.
Wow.
I believe that was the case.
That's criminal, man.
So, and really, you know what's funny is, like, not funny, what's terrifying is that's not uncommon for these predators to insist upon not using any sort of protection or contraception or preventative.
It's very selfish, especially if he is someone that has contracted something like that.
Well, you think about
life sentence.
I mean, when you've been a girl, when I've been a boy, when I've been a girl, whatever we're chatting as, how many times have our offenders said, like, I'm not going to use anything with you because that would just, I don't want
more times than not. More times than not.
And that's terrifying. Not only are you coming to sexually abuse a child, but you are also, besides the mental trauma that will happen for a lifetime, now you're including the potential of physical trauma and physical lifetime ramifications for this abuse. So even if it were a one-time thing, this child may be left with something that lasts for their life. And it's just terrifying to me. It's another level of evil that they bring to this.
Well, it sounds like one of his things that he said, and this isn't something, this has obviously happened to me a lot. You poke fun at me sometimes about this because some of my guys have, like, asked me to marry them.
Yeah,
and offered engagements.
Tony's engaged to at least 15 men around the world now.
I've had many, many marriage proposals. And
Tony even got a picture. You didn't actually
I did not actually get it. I only got the photo of what I was going to get.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it wasn't nice. It was a solid, like, 2.5-carat cubic zirconium ring.
Can you measure cubic zirconium in carats?
Well, the picture had a description, and
it said 2 carats?
It said 2.5. It was big, fat rock.
I thought it was, like, 2.5, like, what would be the measurement of cubic zirconium?
Yeah, I don't really know, but the advertisement that he sent, that he told me he bought the ring, you know, and I know we're off topic, but, man, it was like a total of, like, $189. It was
no way.
Dude, it was nice.
For
it
a cubic nice. Zirconium, it's, how can I say
it?
Zirconium. A hundred and a horse.
189, man.
No way.
I swear.
I bet he got it on sale for 39.
He was showing me the big bucks, right?
But he never. Wait. Just like always, big promises, no results.
Failed.
So that's all to say, Tony is quite adroit at.
Adroit at this. Another word I learned from one of my offenders.
Harken back to an old episode. He's very adept at getting marriage proposals. He's very adept at getting people to love him as a kid.
Yeah.
But, you know, in this one instance, He threw me a curveball.
Yeah, you don't talk a lot about how they profess love for you, but I see maybe this guy had a little expression of love for you.
He did. He loved me. He said he loved me, and I kind of, you know, was like, really? And that's when he gave me his, I think it was a pickup line, but he said that love is a spectrum, and that since we love many people, many different ways, that I would always remember him. And
well, that's true. Here we are today.
He was not wrong. He wasn't wrong. I would remember him forever. I don't know where on that spectrum I was. My guess is that it was a cheap love because he was willing to maybe get me sick as well.
Yeah, that's a really disturbing component to this one that it's kind of hard to wrap the mind around. Like it would lead me to believe if he made some kind of comment about that he takes a medication that would ensure that you would not get the HIV virus. That's criminal. That's selfish. That's depraved on so many levels. And you know, wow.
Yeah, it was definitely terrifying. I'm trying to look and see. I know I started talking to him in 2018, early in the year in 2018. I think it was about 2 or 3 months that goes by of me talking to this individual. And that's going to include a whole bunch of pictures and videos and all sorts of things that I had to endure during this endeavor.
Let's take a moment to talk about the mental health of our own status
as we are
exposed to these things and the prolonged exposure to the communications, to the
vile
pictures.
Let's talk about how patient our families are.
Yeah. We definitely outkicked our coverage in that arena. You know, without them, I think we'd probably both be bouncing around in a rubber room somewhere because of all of the stuff that you get exposed to. And
I don't know if we had to have said something on this on the show before, but one thing that we talk a lot about when we're training other law enforcement about this this sort of investigative type is that this doesn't just happen, you know, during work hours. This happens all hours and all days, and it's ongoing. And so if I talk to someone or Tony's talked to people for long periods of time, over a year period of time. And that's not just like you talk to him a couple times a month or something. That is, you talk to him and your family is having to be there and hear about and put up with you, you know, being sort of distracted by this individual
the time, right? And that's why that's why we're so grateful we have the spouses and families we have, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's kind of unfair to them. But in order to keep in this and stay relevant and continue these cases and be believable and look, you know, portray what we are portraying to be, this is it seems like a 24/7 job, and it's magnified when, you know, we go out to dinner or vacation or an event and we're dragging this stuff with us and having to make communications, you know, as quickly and covertly as we can.
it's less romantic when you're at dinner with your wife than and then you have to talk to your boyfriend.
That is true. That is very true. So let's see where we basically, after he professes all his love to you, like, do you remember how long it went until there was like some kind of designation of like,
I think it was over a month, I know.
And meet or what?
And so this is a wonderful thing because it ties in with what you heard with Jen. But let's talk about the day of the meeting. It's the day of the meet. We don't do this very often, but in this case, he was adamant about seeing me, like picking me up in his vehicle and taking me to somewhere else, but being in a specific area, seeing me, and then, you know, basically moving in from there.
One more level of protection because he's paranoid that the hoopastank is going to jump out on him and thrash him onto the ground, right?
I've never heard you use that word before.
Hoopastank. Yeah,
I've never heard that
word. That's a technical term, actually. I don't really know quite what the technical term for, but
it's something.
Yeah.
It's something. Well, what we saw was we actually had to put an officer out to make sure that he saw someone so that there wasn't even more caution on his part. we actually put a female out.
Oh, really?
Because she was a smaller stature.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would be believed to be a 13-year-old boy being
6'4". I can assure you, you know, those of you, again, we have voices for radio and we're not we're not on TV or on video.
If he saw the glare off my forehead, that's what you're saying?
Brandon can sort of resemble the life-size version of Shrek.
I hate you for that.
And gets, you know, talked about like that sometimes because he's kind of a giant. Like,
one of my family members calls me Shrek and asks me how life under the bridge has been.
I'll be honest. Little side note, just reality, you know. I remember my brother is a big fan and listens to all the podcasts. And I remember before he ever met you, he had listened for months and months and months, you know. And he had listened to every episode. I remember him calling me and he's like, dude, Brandon's got this radio voice. He goes, he's got to be 5'5", 130 pounds, you know, little nerdy guy that does computer forensics. And I'm like, bro, you're way off. I'm like, nerd maybe, but I'm like, size and height.
130 pounds. I haven't seen 130 pounds since I was like
birth.
9, 8, maybe.
I was like back to birth weight.
5'5". I haven't seen 5'5" since I was 10.
And so I remember telling him, I'm like, dude, you're so off. You have no idea. I was like, he's like 6'5", you know, like 185 or whatever.
I love you for saying 185.
I was trying to be generous.
That was beautiful.
Looks like a well-stretched 185 to me.
I'm 185 in my leg.
Anyway, when I told him, he was like, hell no. There's no way possible. And I'm like, I promise you, man. I promise you. And anyway, it came true when he did meet you. He's like, holy shit. He said, that big.
He said, that is an ugly, ugly man. Thank you. Although, anyway, Tony's brother is one of my favorite. In fact, I like him better than you right now. But he is one of the best people in the world. So shout out to him. He's awesome.
So you guys put a female out there because of size and
for stature.
Believability.
Yeah, because I'm not 5'5 and 130. Yeah,
absolutely not.
So she stood out there. He pulled up, and it was on.
Did you know ahead of time? I mean, had you identified him ahead
of time? Yes, we knew who he was. We knew what he was driving, all that stuff. We knew where he was coming from. We knew where his work was, his home was, all of the stuff that was needed beforehand. What's really funny is you heard this in the episode with Jen. She was literally sitting in the backseat of my car while we're waiting to arrest this individual, and she is furiously typing away at a warrant for him, a federal warrant.
Right.
I just remember this. It was so funny. You know, he shows up. We do the arrest, you know, takedown. It's in a vehicle, so there's all sorts of caution and nerves about, you know, running and fleeing and all that stuff. And she just peeks her head out from the window in the backseat and goes, was it him? Did he show? Because she had blanks in the warrant for if it was him and if he showed and what happened and all of that stuff. He was arrested. Now, surprisingly, even after his absolute adherence to the fact that he was not going to use protection, he did bring condoms with him, and he had a lubricant with him called, it's the name of it is called gun oil. I am assuming it wasn't for guns, but it was called gun oil.
Oh, my gosh. I saw that it said gun oil, and I'm like, man, this dude, he couldn't even have stopped and bought some baby oil or something. He's got to bring gun oil. Like, what is
it? It wasn't real gun oil. It wasn't for your firearm. It was actually.
I was going to say, that leaves a smell like you wouldn't believe.
No, the petroleum, for sure. I don't. It's probably causes cancer, too. So this one was designed as a body lubricant, and it was called, the brand is called gun oil.
Well, it says here he also had a hotel key.
He had hotel room keys.
Wow.
I couldn't figure out. I think he had met people in a hotel room and that's why he had it. I don't know that he was intending. And I'll just spoil the surprise ending. We will never know because he invoked his absolute right not to speak with me about the case and did not.
I envision one of those like oh shit moments as he was taken into custody where like his world has absolutely just imploded.
And I'll be honest, I think that the emotion that I could at least see was anger. Yeah. And I mean, you think about it, he's got to have been thinking, as cautious as he was, He was months. Furious.
Hopefully with himself.
I mean, that's what you would want to believe. I think that it's always interesting to me when people exhibit anger towards me for something that I did not cause or do. But yes, so Jen's typing an arrest warrant. We take him into custody. He is going to be taken into federal custody.
But you took him in for a state charge first, right?
We took him in for a state charge.
Yeah. I think we've talked about that in the past where, you know, because although the locations we work, we usually arrest for some state-related crime.
Although, let me say, I don't believe that he was held long enough to just be – I think he was held on a – that because of the way it was being done, is he was going to go into federal custody the very next day.
Oh, okay. Well, that's really rapid. And yeah. We haven't really talked too much about that, but generally, you know, we file a case. We already have a criminal offense, and so it meets the statute that we have for our jurisdictions, for our state charge. And so we typically will arrest and charge for that, which requires an arraignment and gets a bond set and all these sort of things. But there is an eligibility for bond. And then normally, once we progress a little further in cases, we make referrals to our federal partners. And those are drawn up, and they can take a little bit of time depending on the case or the investigation. But there is a way to fast track, which sounds like this was the case. And so it sounds like they did a complaint, right, yeah, to pull him over.
It was.
And so once, and a complaint really is just a federal fancy term for arrest warrant,
yeah,
what we call an arrest warrant.
Yep.
And so it sounds like that's what happened. They got a complaint and took him over to federal custody. And then that triggers a whole bunch of other things. But once, typically for us, once we have a federal complaint or a federal indictment or a federal arrest, we then typically drop all our state charges.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think I had state charges. And, you know, we constantly preach this when we train and talk to law enforcement about these cases. The work begins when the arrest is made. Yeah. Because ultimately, what we believe is he's talking to me. He is absolutely, just from our experience and from the research, likely talking to other kids. And so our goal is always to do our best to search for the real victims out there and find out who they are so we can bring hope and restoration, healing, justice to them. And so that does end up being the case. But before we can get to there, we have to go to a search warrant to his house. For other devices that are being used, because obviously we're moving between phones and computers and tablets and things like that.
Well, clearly this guy's already running a group on a very well-known platform that we know what that platform is used for. And that in itself could open up Pandora's box. There's just no telling from a distribution point of child sex abuse material or other possible hands-on victims and offenders like this.
Yep.
This sounds like it had potential to like grow into something really significant and paramount. So,
and so you can picture it. This is common. I think Tony and I don't ever really mention this to you guys, but this is very common that, you know, an arrest takes place. It sounds like, oh man, that must be so fun. And there's stress going on.
Yeah.
And then, you know, what I know afterwards is then I'm going to try to conduct an interview of the offender, which he chose not to. So we skip that part. But then getting a search warrant for his home, which is about 30 or 40 minutes away, that then has to be executed. So I can tell you right now that the process of getting a search warrant took a little bit of time, an hour or two.
At least.
By the time we got to his home, it was already dark. The arrest happened during the day, but then it was already dark. We get to his house. It's a very large house in a very nice neighborhood. He's got a door and the front door that is like a very ornate, beautiful, almost looks old style door,
wow,
like historically old style door. Well, no one answers. We have to force entry, which means that a ram has to be used. And I'm the person who does that. And that ram went through a panel in the wood door all the way through. And it caught, the ram was stopped by the edge of my hand absolutely breaking my pinky. Oh. I could not use the pinky finger of my right hand for about 2.5 years. It's still a little bit creaky, but
that's the worst.
But I definitely broke my pinky on that old door.
I've actually seen that happen on a fairly newer door with the same kind of scenario where hitting a panel and it went out, and the look on everybody's face was like, hit the doorknob, not the panel, because now you see a guy drop down with a gun looking in the house.
It was absolutely not my intention to hit the panel. I did not mean to hit the panel. When the panel gave way and the ram went through, it was absolutely one of those moments where everyone else went, no, do it this way. And I'm going, holy crap, my finger's like throbbing. It hurts so much.
You do it. My finger's broken.
No, I still grabbed the ram and we went. Or maybe I just reached through the panel and opened the door. I can't remember. But we served this warrant. We executed the warrant. We're finding things like that. Ultimately, we also know that he has a business, which brings a whole other complex set of issues, right? Yeah. Because his business is in a building with a lot of other things in it. But we have to make entry. We have to search. You know, with a business, there are all sorts of considerations, especially like he is the owner of the business, but not always when we go to search a business, that's not always the case. Sometimes right. The person is not the owner of the business. So there are a lot of considerations about, you know, search warrants and what should be searched, what shouldn't be searched. Ultimately, we try to be very reasonable and conservative in what we're searching. So we only searched a very limited area for what we knew might be involved in this and tried to be as
accommodating as possible.
Yeah, the least intrusive we could. Yeah, yeah. And basically, it was after hours, so no one else was there, so we were able to do that very quickly. Ultimately, let's just wrap this up very quickly so that I don't belabor the point, but he was charged federally. In the federal system, and I don't pretend to be experts in this, but what I know from what we've experienced is the federal system does not have the bail thing. Someone has the right to a detention hearing, and that's before a judge. And the detention hearing is basically to prove or disprove that this person is. And of course, if I'm wrong, please don't quote me. You can correct us. But my understanding is it's to prove or disprove that someone is a flight risk or a danger to the community or themselves.
Right.
And so ultimately, he argued against detention. And he was not detained. The ruling
was
pretty
rare.
It was rare.
It's pretty rare. It's happened to me once, but it is pretty rare.
It was, and it was surprising to me. But this individual's, Blake Wells' spouse, was volunteered to be a third-party custodian, which means that they're going to be responsible for making sure he can't access the internet, that he shows up to court, whatever those things that entail. So, Wells' spouse agreed to do that, and he's not allowed to be using an internet device. And eventually, after a month, couple months or 3 months or so, Wells' spouse found him using an internet device.
Wow.
And to their credit, man, integrity-wise, reported him.
Wow.
And because of that, he was then put back into detention.
And that's a heavy thing, because once in detention, if they are detained by a judge, they're not getting out until there's a final disposition of the case.
Yes.
And that's very, very different than how things happen on the state level. You know, it's very common for someone to receive a bond on a state charge, make bond, go back to work, go back to their lives, you know, just make the appropriate appearances when they're required. Because the process, you know, obviously from arrest to bond or to a trial or whatever on the state side could be years, be a couple of years.
And in this case, I mean, I just have to give credit where credit's due again to his spouse who reported him. That has to be a weight and a responsibility you don't want to have to do, because like you're basically saying my spouse has broken.
Well, I'm sure there's probably, you know, I've never had one
guilt
where the detention was or not allowed and someone was, you know, acting as in their place as their care and conservator or whatever. So I would assume that there are some rules that are read by the judge that, you know, says, hey, you're mandated, you're required, or blah, 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 blah. There's maybe some consequences. So good for that person, whoever that was, to come forward and have the integrity to come forward, even though it's their loved one.
Even though it's a very weighty thing to do. Ultimately, we did find that there was another victim that Mr. Wells sexually abused.
A child?
A child.
Oh.
But this victim did not want to participate in prosecution, nor did their family want them to.
That's not an uncommon thing either.
And think about this. So, male victims, I think we've talked about this at length, but it does bear repeating. The statistics say that some of the statistics say that females are abused more than males. The statistics are sort of skewed in showing that the males are a much less abused category, but I don't think that's accurate.
No, I don't either. I've actually seen it play out in one particular case that involved a person who was in a position of trust, and we uncovered, I don't know, 15 to 18 additional victims. And this person...
All males. Yeah.
That were, you know, at specific events and things where this person was the party in charge, and it was just manipulation, control. The same things we see with grooming and this behavior, but he literally offended on upwards of 20-some kids. And by the time we had identified them, they were all adults, obviously.
Yeah.
But their reluctance to come forward, out of all those numbers, I think 20 total, we had two that were willing to come forward. Or actually, I'm sorry, we had three that were willing to come forward. And as we approached the trial, sadly, one of them committed suicide over the pressure of having to go forward in court.
That's terrible.
It was gut-wrenching. Like, from where I sat, it was gut-wrenching for me because I felt responsible, you know, in some part for sort of bringing this person forward, you know, even though they were more than willing and saying more than willing to do it. But it just goes to show you just the trauma that these young people endure. And it's a lifelong sentence.
And man, it's courage that they come forward and 100%. Talk about it. And so this is obviously not to diminish what female victims go through.
No, not because at all. It's the same way.
It's not thing. Less. But what we've seen in our experience, particularly with male victims, is they are just absolutely refuse to talk about it. They will flat out sometimes deny it
to even them,
or when there is direct evidence of it. You know, there's video evidence or something like that.
And I think that's why the component is there. I think there's a percentage of young men who have suffered a trauma like that, and it's traumatic, it's confusing, and maybe that's
there's a stigma, not, there's stigma embarrassment with it,
and they don't want that part ever exposed.
Yeah.
And so for that reason, they don't really get the necessary help that they need or ever get put back on a path of, getting things figured out and how to deal with it. And
there was no blame. We absolutely understood. We did not blame or fault this person for not wanting to participate. But it just told me what we know is always true, is that we should look for the real victims in the cases after we've made an arrest, because there are real victims that these predators have. And our hope is always to find those kids who have been abused by someone and get them out of that circumstance, get them the help they need to make sure that hopefully their future is different. Ultimately, he did go to court. He was sentenced. I was a little surprised at first, and I don't know, because of what kind of serious, heinous offender I think he was, I was a little disappointed. He was sentenced to federal prison for 12 years.
Wow. That's a soft hit.
Yeah.
And so who knows what the reasonings are for this?
I mean, the mandatory minimum for this charge would have been 10 years.
Right.
And then I think that
there was never any production aspects in it where wanting you to do things or produce or anything.
And so
like that.
Because I think that there was at least the possibility of another victim that influenced to bring
slightly.
A couple more years. So maybe
upward
ultimately,
departure or whatever,
yeah, I think maybe ultimately 12 is actually better than what we could have gotten alternatively. But it did feel like, man, this guy was absolutely dangerous.
Were you able to determine or find out, was there any residual effects based on the status of the group that he created, or
it existed for a long time?
Even, obviously got shut down when his arrest was made, or it stayed on?
No, it stayed.
So maybe he wasn't the original owner. He was just one of the...
I think he was, but I think with him gone, it couldn't be shut down. And I don't know that there was anything in there that I could prove that would shut it down from the platform stance.
Gotcha.
But his current release is still 4 or 5 years away from here. So that's a good thing for us. But again, the twists and turns, the curveballs that were thrown made this individual what we're going to...
Pretty crazy, man.
We're going to say is one of the more dangerous predators. He's absolutely someone that I think was good to protect the community from.
Hey, man, that was a good case. That's a good guy to get, and you should be proud of that fact. And you get him put away, and he can't, you know, at least now until... time he gets out, at least he has no access to be able to hurt another kid, and ultimately that's the game. You know, we believe in the system that we have, whether we agree with it or not.
Yep.
We're appreciative of our prosecutors and everybody that plays a role in these things.
1,000%.
And you know, at the end of the day, it is what it is, and
prosecutors have a tough job, judges have a tough job,
yeah.
Law enforcement has a tough job, and at the end of the day, Tony said bunghole.
I did say bunghole a couple times, but let me give a, before we just completely sign off, let me give a shameless plug, a couple shameless plugs, because we don't really do that very often. One, if you're a supporter of our show, if you like it, if you think that you have an interest, I would encourage you to go hit our Patreon page. We don't plug that much. We have not gotten into this to get ourselves rich, because we don't make any money and we actually lose money on it. But we do have a Patreon page where if it is something you feel like you want to help support us and keep these things going, what it really does fund is just the kind of hosting fees it takes monthly and some of the administrative things it takes to get these things going.
And a special thanks to our current Patreon.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Special place in our heart for you guys.
Yeah, they're so dedicated. Ann and John and all the others. Well, we don't have many. But at the end of the day... you know, they help keep us accountable. They're constantly messaging and encouraging and offering really, really tremendous words of encouragement on a very regular basis. And it's not anything that'll break your bank. We have three levels. I think it's like $3, $5, and $8 a month or something like that. You can check it out. Just look for Catfish Cops on Patreon, and you can see that. And then additionally, again, we don't plug very often, but we do get asked when we're in person with people, you know, hey, do you guys have any merch or anything like that? And we do. If you just hit our website, catfishcops.com, and you hit the merchandise tab, you'll see all kinds of stuff. Like, there's so much crazy swag out there, coffee cups and Bible covers and t-shirts and sweatshirts and like barbecue aprons and just bags and just all kinds of
stuff. My good friends suggested a seat pillow, a butt pillow, he called it, with our
a butt pillow.
And I said, so wait, you just want to sit on our logo? That's and so I don't know. I think it was a jab, but it was whatever. A funny one.
I
so
bet it exists. I bet it's on there. They got just about everything you can think of. But and then so anyway, if you have an interest in that, go hit the website, go hit the merch tab, and you'll see all that. And then lastly, I want to just mention, because we are as we mentioned, had been in the Pacific Northeast or Northwest area of the country. It was kind of funny because at the end of the class where we were teaching this specific law enforcement group, you know, typically at the end of the class, we go around handing out, you know, our business cards so people have contact numbers for us to get in touch and if they have further questions or whatever. But we also give out a little swag. We always give out stickers, you know, for the episodes or for the podcast. And as I was handing them out, one of the guys in the class, I kind of set it down and he looked at it. And I said, hey, man, here's a sticker. If you're into podcasts, you can give us a listen. And he goes, you guys are Catfish Cops? And this, now, mind you, we had been here for the whole week. And we had
not never, in a bad way, right?
No, not in a bad way.
You guys are, or maybe, like, you guys are
Catfish Cops? No, I took it as a, like, I said, yeah. And he goes, I know this podcast. And I'm like, really? And he goes, I've listened. And he goes, I had no idea it was you guys.
That's
and,
awesome. That's so
and I'm
cool.
Like, wow. He goes, dude, that's so cool. And he starts just ranting and raving about the sticker. You know, the sticker gets a lot of play because it's unique looking. Thank God we trademarked it, right?
Right. The same individual made a humorous photo of me during the class.
Oh, he did. That's
to
right.
Post. So,
oh, please let me tell that.
No. Shout out. We'll tell it another time.
No.
This
no,
has
no.
gone
this
too long
good,
already.
No, it's not. We're barely into this. So, When Brandon, like as he's currently wearing, he'll wear a hoodie sweatshirt. And so we mentioned, I think, either in this episode or the previous episode, that there sometimes is a resemblance to Shrek just from the size that Brandon is, because he's a gigantuan person. And so when he wears his
my light-colored hoodie sweatshirt,
his light-colored hoodies, he resembles Senator, what's his name, Fetterman? Is that his name?
It is.
Senator Fetterman.
We didn't come up with this.
No.
What? My boss and someone I've worked with a long time who listens to is the one who called me that. He goes, "You look like that senator." And now it's stuck. And yeah. So this week they made a humorous poster. Photo of me yeah. with Fetterman's body and my face over it. And it was...
And we called him Senator for a few days, so it was pretty interesting.
Anything with my face on it is terrifying and terrible. So I'm sorry, Senator Fetterman. That is an insult to you, I'm sure, that has my face on it.
Hey, man. It's accurate.
You think any senators are listening?
No.
I didn't think so.
Nah, probably not. But hey, if you know him, tell him to listen. Download an episode and listen.
Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.
Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to the Catfish Cops podcast, brought to you by Brandon Poor and Tony Godwin. For additional information and available resources, please visit our website, www.catfishcops.com, and click on the resources link.